plenty of space to spread out everything we need.
So let's go get your stuff ready.
I'm all packed.
Then what are we waiting for?
Oh, let's go.
Oh, wait a minute.
What? The sheep. Oh, yeah. The
sheep. Almost forgot about them.
Do we really have to tape them?
Oh, we are good shepherds.
Yeah, I know, but the sheep are just such a pain.
A huge pain.
Yeah, maybe we should just leave them alone.
Here, with the wolves around?
See, if I even buy a wolf thing, I mean, have you ever really seen a wolf around here?
Not personally.
Me neither. Maybe it's just a myth or something to make us feel guilty.
If so, keep us tied to the sheep.
Besides, from what I know about these sheep, they could probably take the wolf.
You think?
They're mean. Have you seen the way that one rams and hits the others? Don't you turn your back on that guy.
I guess that's why they call them rams.
Just stay out of his way. And that's one. See? Laddie over there, she bites.
Oh, she got me on the kneecap.
She goes for the knees every time. I hate
it. Yeah, so...
So, do we really have to take them? We make so much better time without them.
Right there.
We could be up on the new pasture by noon instead of taking 2 days. Kicking back and relaxing, we take them spend half of our time babysitting.
Yeah, I know.
They take off and run. They will not stay together, and no matter what we do, one of them is always lagging behind.
You got that right. And they're always hurting themselves and getting stuck.
It's like we end up being their personal servants.
Yeah. Of course, we are their shepherds.
Would you stop saying that? What does it matter? When the sheep are as hardy as these, I say, let them fend for themselves.
Really? We could do that?
I don't even think they'd notice. Everyone would be happier.
We just leave them.
Well, they got some grass around here. They'll figure it out. Let's go.
Okay, I mean, there's really not much food for us up there.
Good point. You mean because there's...
no sheep.
Well, no, you're right there. At least we'll bring the sheep.
But I still don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, come on. We've been over this.
I know. It just seems like as the shepherds, maybe we shouldn't be eating the sheep.
Why not? We spent our time feeding them. Why can't they return the favor?
Well, it's just that if we keep doing that, we won't have much of a flock left.
And that wouldn't be so bad, would it? Besides, they reproduce and I'm not worried about it.
Shepherds? There's something, those two like it.
Very self-centered.
Very self-centered. Really not into being inconvenienced.
Read the characteristics. You have it.
Oh, the characteristics of them. Yeah, what did it say, Sam? No, I don't have that.
Here.
Oh, your props. Cynical. Selfish. Consumptive. Not as in tuberculosis, as in consuming. and Nancy, all of the above, but with a slight conscience. I'm not even sure I saw, well, I guess it was a slight conscience there, but it was certainly slight. Very slight. Very selfless. These are scary shepherds. Would you entrust your sheep to these two shepherds?
No.
Not if you knew. I mean, if you had sheep, of course. The Ezekiel texts that Michelle read today were about shepherds that are like this. I don't know if you picked that up. One of the most famous passages in Ezekiel, another prophet in the Old Testament, talking about bad shepherds. And bad shepherds are a fact of life. And God quickly condemns dishonorable shepherds and holds them accountable. What's interesting in the Ezekiel text that she read, though, is shepherds... That wasn't just about, obviously, literal shepherds. It was about shepherds as people. And shepherds are those who care for other people. Sometimes they are priests. Sometimes they are pastors. Sometimes they are parents. Sometimes they are neighbors. It's a metaphor. And in the New Testament, Jesus is the good shepherd. But in the Old Testament, it's people, other people who are shepherds to one another. And God has entrusted, if you will, this valley and mountain and the sheep here into our care. We are as a worshiping congregation here in the mountain and the valley. So what I want to talk a little bit today is how can we be better shepherds? Because God does see us as shepherds to his sheep. And I think we certainly do a bit better than these two shepherds. I haven't heard anybody volunteering to eat the sheep. But how can we be better shepherds? I began working on this sermon actually with the Jeremiah text that we read responsibly, which actually can be really confusing. I don't know if you know this, but in Hebrew, there's no punctuation in Hebrew. There's also no vowels, which is a really big, big problem. But it's very hard to know in some of these Old Testament passages who's speaking when. What's Jeremiah's voice? What's God's voice? And the way we read that text responsibly is one way to kind of parcel out those words. You heard Jeremiah's voice, the weeping prophet. His heart is sick. He is overwhelmed with grief. He sees what's coming down the road for the people. It's destruction. It's death. And he shares the pain of the people, even at the same time that he's really dismayed at the choices that they have made to turn away from God. And then you guys got the people's voice, which, if you really step back and look at it, is kind of whiny. Is the Lord not in Zion? Is the king not there? The harvest is ended, the summer is ended, and we're hungry. It's whiny. In case you didn't catch that. They want God to save them, but kind of in a Santa Claus kind of way. They want God to save them, but they've not been faithful. They're not personally in anguish and repentance. And they really don't get it. They don't know how serious it is, what's going on historically. You see, the people of Israel are about to be destroyed. And they are in 587, 586 BC. The Babylonians come in and conquer the land and send everybody into exile. Really pretty much about to be wiped off the face of the map. And they're kind of worried, they're kind of whining about where the harvest food is. And God's like, you got a much bigger problem. God's voice. Why have they provoked me with their idols and foreign gods? It's fascinating, this passage right here, because usually we're the ones that ask why. And here, it's God that asks why. Why are they doing what they're doing? Why are they acting the way they're acting? God is crushed by the sins and the choices of the people, and yet he loves them. And God's voice and Jeremiah's voice mingle together. The last part that I read could be either voice. And it doesn't really matter, in some ways, whose voice it belongs to, because both Jeremiah and God love the people, and love the people with great passion, and also with great heartache. What is clear is that we're called to love the way God loves. We're called to love the way Jeremiah loves. We're called to love and to care for the people around us. It's what it means to be a person of God. That what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. So I'm going to ask today as a question for you to ponder, and to ponder within your own heart. And that's this. It's a simple question. Do you care about the people around you? Do you care about those people that God has put around you? I know that you care for your family, you care for your friends, you care for the people who are close to you. But do you really care what happens to the folks, say, who work up at Deli's, or the folks who work in the administration building, or the folks who work downstairs in ski patrol, or care about the people who are teaching up at the Stratton School? Do you really care? Don't answer that out loud. And what does it mean to really care? If we're to be the people of God, to build bridges and connect with the people around us, we must first love them. We must first care about them, with the people that we're trying to connect with. The people that God has placed in our lives. We've got to care about them. And that, while it's a simple question, is really a profound one. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned a book to you that I was reading that has kind of stuck with me. It's called Look Me in the Eye. It's by a guy named John Elder Robison, and he's the guy who has Asperger's syndrome. And he writes about his life, about growing up as a person who has Asperger's syndrome, which is kind of a form on the continuum of autism. And he writes about his childhood, and he writes about growing up. And I recall a couple of the stories that he told about living in the world, but kind of thinking differently. And he was talking about, as a child, or even now, he says, when there's a national disaster publicized on TV, say a tornado or a hurricane or an earthquake, the people around him, he noticed, would be, quite devastated. The girls in his elementary school classroom would cry, the boys would get agitated. Anyway, he would often get criticized when those kind of things happened for not showing more emotion. And his friends, or people, I shouldn't say friends, the people around him would say, "Don't you care that all those people died in the earthquake?" And he writes, he goes, frankly, I didn't care. I didn't care, because I don't know those people. Disasters are happening all the time, they just don't all make the papers. Why should I be more upset just because this photo happened to make the front page than about all the other disasters that are happening every day? And he wondered if he was really uncaring, or if the other people around him were actually just being disingenuous. Because, if you really cared about everybody when something happened, you'd hardly be able to function. It's an interesting question. Because, was there really something wrong with me, or were these people just overreacting? That's it. He also had an episode happen when he was young, when he was a child. Evidently, there was a child who had been killed, run over by a car, I think it was, as the story's told. And he overhears a neighbor talking to his mother about this little boy who had been killed. And there's John, little John, standing in the room, and the neighbor looks over at John and he's smiling. And of course the neighbor immediately decides this child is a psychopath because he is smiling. And John writes, "It wasn't until years later that I was able to articulate what was happening in that moment, because it really affected his mother, really affected the neighbor. and he certainly got a label, an emotional label. And he says, you know, this is what I was thinking. I have a little brother. My little brother was not run over by a car. My family's okay. My mom's okay. We're all right. And I smiled because my family was safe. Makes sense, doesn't it? He wasn't smiling because something bad had happened to somebody else. Although he admits he wasn't particularly sad, he didn't notice. But he was smiling because his family was safe. And he was labeled them. Switching them. But to care for people around us, people who are not our intimate family and friends. Building bridges between us and those around us is a challenge. And it's a challenge that I'm going to be kind of bringing us back to again and again in different ways this fall. Because if we're going to connect with the people around us to build a sturdy bridge, to be able to be Jesus' disciples to them, we got to care. And we got to figure out a way to care. And so what I'm asking is, do you care? And do you want to care? That's a whole other question. Do you want to care? Because caring makes life complicated. Caring makes life difficult. These two shepherds in our skit decided they didn't want to care, and they had justified not caring, and they were doing pretty good with it. They had really convinced themselves that the sheep were not their responsibility, and that they could go merrily on their way. Jeremiah cared. He maybe even cared too much. But his love propelled him to action. He spoke God's word. He shared God's heart. He prayed for God's mercy. How might we, as people of God, begin caring? Truly caring. How can we begin wanting to care? Wanting to love. And I'm going to throw out to you that I really believe that form follows function and that feeling follows behavior. If you wait till you feel like you love somebody, you may be waiting for a really long time. But you can choose a loving action at any moment. And oftentimes, if you will, the feeling will follow. Form follows function. And often feeling follows behavior. I'm reading a book called Building Bridges, no surprise there. And the guy, Edward Hammett, says this. He goes, trying to find a network with the spiritually thirsty, unchurched adults in my life is now part of my daily personal ministry. What he does, and I'm going to commend this, what he does is he tithes his time, his money, his knowledge within the unchurched, if you will, community. Within the community, not within the church. He tithes his time, his money, and his knowledge in the community, which is a reversal of what we're often taught. We're often taught to bring your tithes to the storehouse of the Lord, to spend your time and your energy within the church. Now, the good news is this. We are not an insular, isolated group of people who hide out in the church. As a matter of fact, we barely even ever show up at the church. So we're really good, actually. We're really quite a ways there in this challenge. Because we're all actively engaged in our community. We are not people who live in a Christian ghetto. We couldn't be further from that, actually. But I'm offering you a way to think differently about what you do and what you already do, what you do. So many of you are involved in the community and in various things. We talk about tithing 10% of our income to God's work. What would it be in your head if you tithe 10% of your time to connect with people who are not in your church, who are not connected with the community? You spend plenty of time doing that already. I just want to raise your awareness that you are in service to God whenever you do what you do. Wherever you go, you are bringing God with you. Whatever you do, do in the name of the Lord. And I want to raise that awareness. The tithing of our time and money and knowledge to the community is one way to begin to care. It's about living intentionally. And allow yourself to care as you're doing those things, many of whom you are already doing. So the first thing is that concept of tithing to your community, to what you're doing. The second thing is, while you're out there, listen hard. Listen. One of the ways we can build bridges is to learn to listen. To listen to understand, not just to judge, but to listen hard. To listen to individuals. To listen for their pain and to not judge it. And to listen to the community. We, the irregular. What are the concerns of our neighborhood? If we were living in the city, it would be gun violence. We're not worried about gun violence. But what are we concerned about? Is it latchkey kids? Is it transportation for the elderly? Is it access to health care? Is it the school board? Is it coach time for the middle school athletic program? What is it that our community is caring about? Listen. And listen to the cry behind it. So I'm just inviting us to kind of be aware of tithing our energies within the community, to raise the level of awareness for what you're doing when you're already doing it, to listen hard, and then thirdly, to pray. To pray for our community, to pray for this resort. Jeremiah, in his passage, says this: is there no balm in Gilead? Gilead was a place where they made healing lotions balm. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? In Jeremiah, the answer is no, there is not. No. There is not. But you and I know the song, right? What's the song? There is a balm in Gilead. That's nowhere in the Bible. This is where it comes from. I was fascinated. The Negro spiritual totally changes the imagery to what we know today. It was a slave song composed of out of great suffering. It's a lament. It's written by broken people for broken people. And it turns the imagery on its head and says, there is a balm in Gilead. There is a healing in that place. And his name is Jesus. He weeps. He loves. He cares. There is a balm in Gilead. His name is Jesus. So we have a couple of minutes here. And I'm going to invite us to do that third thing, which is pray. And pray for our community. And this is what I'm going to do. A slight departure. I'm going to play a song. Guess who it is? There is a balm in Gilead. And I thought we'd like to hear some people sing it, like, who really get the words. And so we're going to do that. And during that time, I invite you to listen, and to listen to your heart, to listen for God's voice, and to listen to what comes to your heart about what and who. Names of people you'd like God to touch, concerns of our community, and back to that piece of paper and pencils for, write them down, write them down. We're not going to look at them. We're not going to talk about them. All we're going to do is put them in. I've made a prayer box for the fall, and we're going to put those in there, and we'll place the names in our prayer box, and we're going to add to it all fall. No human being will ever read these concerns, we've got a new prayer group that's up and started running, and we will pray for the whatever goes in that box. We're going to pray for it every week because the Lord knows what's in that. So that's what we're going to do. So there's some paper there. Hopefully you grabbed one. If not, rip off the bottom of your bullet. Just throw that in. But I think it's important to write what comes to you down, to commit that to the Lord. And just be in prayer. Let this time be a time of prayer. We don't often sit and be in quiet. So let's give ourselves a chance to do that.